Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
The kids on Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
Halloween's a Freddy Krueger podcast.
Was locked in a room with a girl who went in alive and came out in a rubber bag.
From the Consequence Podcast Network, the minds behind The Losers Club, comes a new podcast in fantasy terror.
Nancy, there's something wrong with you. You're imagining things.
Halloweenies, a Freddy Krueger podcast.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK, Independent Louisville, at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. However you found us, I hope you stick around week after week. We put out interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday over at Consequence of Sound. So please subscribe. You're obviously a fan of interviews. Why not keep up with all of them? You can subscribe at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, YouTube and Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith. It's a really special episode today for my friend, the late Scott Hutchinson of Frightened Rabbit. He passed away 1 year ago, May 10th, 2018. And while his passing has left a huge hole in all of our hearts, the music that he made still stands and has gone on to do so much good in the world, whether it was just us hearing ourselves in his music or influencing so many bands after Frightened Rabbit released even just their first album. So I thought we'd do today is I've put together the three recorded interviews that Scott and I had done with each other. Three times I was very lucky to be talking to one of my favorite wordsmiths as a ways to remember not just what a brilliant mind that Scott had, but what a funny, funny person that he was, as so many fans and interviewers will tell you. So what you're going to hear is one from 2013, one from 2016, and then our final interview from 2017, which was about Frightened Rabbit's final release while Scott was alive, called Recorded Songs. We're going to start with 2013, though. I had met Scott a handful of times before this, and we'd hung out, but it wasn't until they were promoting Pedestrian Verse that we actually found ourselves behind the same microphone outside on a grassy knoll in Louisville, Kentucky at the Iroquois Amphitheater when they were on tour with The National. And it was so much fun. We got to talk about the similarities and differences in Kentucky and Scotland, especially with bourbon and whiskey and accents and colloquialisms. That was a fun one to throw in there, as well as their EP, the Late March Death March EP, and of course the album Pedestrian Verse. So that's where we'll start right here. Part one of Kyle Meredith with Scott Hutchinson. All right, hey, it's the Weekly Feed. I'm Kyle Meredith and Scott from Frightened Rabbit. And you've made it to Kentucky.
We did, yeah, quite easily.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about the similarities of Kentucky and Scotland.
Okay.
You're in bourbon country.
Whiskey.
Yeah, you're in bourbon country. And I gotta say, I like better than scotch. Nothing against,
That's fine.
The home country.
That's fine.
It's two very... I mean, you put it in the same family, but they taste completely different.
Well, we age them in the same barrels. We got all our barrels from you guys.
Is that right?
Yeah. Single malt Scotch whiskey needs... Yeah. It has to be aged for at least 1 year in bourbon.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So we have some of it in there.
Yeah. You guys, you kind of have this reputation, and I don't mean to say that a character thing like that. But, you drink, and you guys kind of wear it as a badge of honor, too.
I think, I wouldn't endorse that, but I would say that it's had a huge impact on our music and the way we are and the way we live. It's a Scottish pastime.
Sure.
And that way, it kind of seeps, if you like, into everything we do.
Yeah,
yeah.
Are you worried any about your reputation or your character when it comes to that? Like, man, maybe I need to not say something else about drinking.
We've always had the kind of motto, if you like, that it's like be honest and true to ourselves.
Sure.
And until I quit drinking, there's going to be drinking references
in
there.
I'm for you. Yeah. We should say that you're on tour with The National.
Yep.
And this must be, this is like the most depressing, like lyrically depressing, dark, drinky tour of all time.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's soaked, let me tell you. Yeah. But I think it's a great match, actually, as well, because you have no idea how, it's funny, well, you probably do, but it's funny how when you take depressing music, how joyful the live experience can become, because everyone's there just like, well, A, they might be drunk too, but there's a sense of release, because people come here to kind of forget about all the stuff, and then it's nice that they have this release when they see the live show.
Well, you're kindred spirits right here, so it's all good.
This is
not judging, by the way.
Good.
I'm finding a likeness in you. So let's talk about everything that's going on, because you got the new record out.
Yep.
You signed to Atlantic.
We did.
That was kind of the big news at first about this.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't too big of a deal. I mean, there were a few people who were kind of like got in touch to say, oh, that's that then, we're never going to listen to you again, you sellouts. And I don't think even this concept of selling out exists anymore.
No. Not like it used to. I mean, we grew up in the 90s where that was a thing.
Right. But Sonic Youth signed to Geffen. And
they put out a greatest hits in Starbucks.
Yeah, right.
Starbucks only.
So I just don't think it applies anymore. Right. And then if anything, we were given more freedom than we ever had in the past, to make the kind of record we really wanted to.
And that's always a kind of a question about when that happens, because when you're signing to a major, it's the major game. You're kind of on the bigger scale.
Yeah.
And you have to think, I have to assume that there's at least some of that that goes on when you're writing those songs. Like, are these going to work on the bigger platform? Was that ever part of this?
No.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was expecting to have a battle with them.
Sure.
They were going to come in. And
where's your pop song?
Where's the single?
Yeah,
I don't hear one. And not once did that happen. So I was like all ready for a fight, and it never came. So I just put my gloves down. And
I mean, you guys have singles, though. We shouldn't say this is the singlest record. There's lots of singles on this record, naturally, I guess. And maybe that's why
the thing
didn't have to.
Yeah, I think I've been writing songs in a pop structure, with a fairly dark twist at times. But I've been writing songs like that since we started.
Sure.
And for anyone to say, oh, they've gone pop, well, just listen to our first record. We have pop songs that are, kind of poorly produced, but they're pop songs nonetheless.
We liked those.
Yeah.
And we like them all. Of course, there was some criticism that went back, and maybe this was with hardcore fans that didn't so much like Winter of Mixed Drinks as much as the early stuff, because it was a different sound.
I think so, yeah.
Was there ever a reaction to that with Pedestrian Verse, where you went, because that's what a lot of reviews are saying, Pedestrian Verse, like, oh, it's kind of like their older stuff, but, with a bigger sound.
Yeah, I think the... if anything, what happened was a lot of people who maybe didn't like the third record came back.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it maybe did have a lot more in common with stuff that we're writing before that. And the thing that happened with Winter of Mixed Drinks was that I think I felt like I revealed too much of myself on the album before that. And it was maybe even like there's a sense of embarrassment. I was like, I didn't mean all this to be public. And then I kind of reined it in. So actually, you know, I kind of smoothed off the edges. And yeah. Then realizing in doing so, I realized that that's not actually what we're best at.
You've also got this thing where you guys talking about, you know, with this record, you kind of opened it up. And you wanted to... You got bored with your songs in the past. A lot bored with them, so you'd rewrite them and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So you went into this one, you know, in a different way. Mm-hmm. But I have to imagine while you're still out there, you're still going to get bored of these songs and you're still going to rewrite them. Is that...
Kind of. They'll take on a development. And, yeah. You know, that's... You know, night after night playing the same songs live, then you develop them. Like, for instance, the first song from the new album, Acts of Man, has this big, I don't know, Korn-style heavy metal ending now. And
Frightened Rabbit does Korn.
Yeah. We get the 7-string bass out, and but it's things like that just keep it interesting.
Yeah.
And for fans as well, you know, they don't want to just I don't think anyone just wants to go to a concert and hear the CD a little bit louder.
No.
So we try and change it
to mess it. Yeah. Because there are those. You go and you, and especially the pop acts, you go and you pay $100 to go in there and watch the album live.
Pretty much. Yeah. And
I mean, I would love to see your dance routine and your lip syncing. That's I can't wait.
Oh,
for that.
Oh yeah. You know. I mean, costume changes
sure,
and everything.
Sure.
Absolutely. But yeah, no, that's when we really would have sold out.
So with Pedestrian Verso, and that is talked about because you, for the first time, you opened up some of the songwriting to the
yep.
band. That's kind of one of the hook stories of this album.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the reason for that? Was it because you needed a different direction, you know, or were you just looking to kind of take the pressure off of you? Because when you're the sole songwriter,
yeah,
that's it.
Well, both of those reasons are valid. I didn't do it in order to take the pressure off, because I don't mind pressure as such. However, when it was relieved,
yeah,
it was, well, there's no other way to put it. It was a relief.
Yeah, right.
You know, it was, I felt like I was a little bit less involved in the songs. You know, when you're kind of like, you're fully immersed in a song, you can't really even see it for what it's worth.
Sure.
Or make changes, you know, based on any kind of objectivity. And I was able to take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice to see the thing as a whole, and see parts, and hear parts that were not mine, that were exciting and interesting to me. Because in a weird way, if it's all your own music, it becomes less interesting.
Yeah.
And you're not surprised by it anymore. So that was the problem. I wasn't, my own music wasn't surprising me anymore.
What, did you ever worry, though, that getting the influence of other people, the song wasn't going to go where you'd hoped it'd go? Because still, when you're the central songwriter, you get to direct when you need to. But
yep.
still, when you bring in those influences, you could lose everything, possibly.
Possibly, but I think whenever I let go in that way, it gained so much more rather than losing it. It was a process. It was a process for me to let go of that control.
Right.
But as soon as I started hearing what, you know, I was truly excited by what we were coming up with. And then after that, I just kind of like completely let go.
Yeah. And there's some of the process, I guess, that makes it into the song, because I hear an oil slick.
Yeah.
You know, the oil slick.
Yeah.
When you're talking about that kind of in the, you know, about why would anyone swim through your lyrics?
Yeah.
And why would anyone like your voice?
I know.
Is that kind of like, because talk about honesty. That's kind of honesty right there.
Yeah.
You know, I see it almost as kind of like a joke on your audience, you know, on your fans. Like, this is my own personal joke on my fans.
It is. Well, I love, one of the things I love, one of my favorite bands, The Hold Steady, do it all the time as well. And actually, Matt does it a lot too, where you kind of make these self-referential mm-hmm. songs, you know, and almost becomes like there's a secret code within the songs that lots of them refer back to other ones from
right.
the past. And although it is a joke, it is also like, I feel like it's more involving, because there's a sense of history and a timeline attached right. to it as well. But I always like putting humour in my songs. It's mm-hmm. a really Scottish trait, is to treat the worst times in your life with a sense of humour, you know. like, everything's completely disastrous, but at the end of that song, like, I guess we'll be fine.
What a beautiful culture.
Yeah, I know, right?
Hulk Steady's a great example of that. I mean, he talks about getting famous and being cooler suddenly in his song, you know?
Yeah, I know, that's the thing. We have to, and there's no point in someone who has a great life pretending that they don't, you know, just for the sake of instilling pain in the songs, and, you know, and I wouldn't do that either.
So, fast forward now, there's already an EP. I guess in the UK, it's the Woodpile EP.
In America, it's
Late March, Death March EP, which is probably because two labels couldn't get on the same timeline, is what I'm guessing.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, they are only 5 hours apart, but they seem to be.
Right, yeah, just worlds, different mindsets altogether. And I guess that's, you know, Europe, the singles work differently over there.
It does work really differently over here, which is great. Actually, one great thing about the US mode of release is that it's very much more focused on the album.
Yeah.
Which I think is where we write albums.
In this format, in this genre or whatever, you know, I can see that.
Yeah. So which is why we, I guess, like when we have to release a single with the EP, we like to be a bit more generous.
Yeah.
With the content of it.
It's great because a lot of bands don't take that time anymore. I mean, these are new songs, right?
Yeah. Three new songs. Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever get worried though that when you're putting them on these EPs, they're not going to get, you know, kind of the stage that they could, because these are three great songs.
Right.
Radio Silence, Candlelit, and Default Blues.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Default Blues wasn't so much of a problem. That was supposed to go on Pedestrian Verse, and it never made the cut. And
personally, my favorite song off of it.
Really? Yeah. I mean, well, this is it. I don't know, like, I think an EP, although it doesn't give it full album status, we also like to make sure people are updated as to what we're doing at that point in time and how our sound is developing. And I don't want to sit on a song for two more years,
right,
you know?
Right.
It's just when it's ready, it should be out.
Get out there.
Yeah.
If it's going to have a life, it's going to have a life. Default Blues, actually, is similar lyrically in spots to The Oil Slick.
Yeah. Default Blues is, kind of... It's kind of about the...
Maybe that's why I centered on both of those.
Well, that idea that I was just saying, whereby, you know, so many songwriters just, like, have this phony pain.
Right.
And you can spot it a mile away. It's cliched and essentially amounts to nothing. And I think that song's about those writers, really.
Yeah. There's something, I guess, you know, because you talk about your voice, that stood out to me, too, because I remembered post... 93 or whatever it was, if you were from the UK and you wanted to break in America, you had to sound American.
Yeah, I remember.
And then Oasis came, and, you know, and a few other bands, but I think they were probably the biggest at the second to do that. And you've never had to hide it. You've never had to say, oh, man, I have to sound it, because you're full-on Scottish in these songs.
Yeah. Well, the way I started writing was, like I say, it's always been about my own personal experience, and it seemed odd. There was a small clutch of Scottish bands who had begun to do that at the time that we were starting out as well. And we all kind of just grouped together for safety. Mm-hmm. But there was this total, you know, that mid-Atlantic kind of, I don't know where it was from, that accent that pervaded Scottish music. And now, when I go home and I go to shows and hear bands that I'd never heard of from Scotland, they're all singing in their own accent.
Right.
And I think that's a fantastic thing.
I don't know why people didn't do it before, because, of course, you know, from any other culture to any other culture, it's a bit romantic. You know,
that's what I think, it really works. Yeah.
Delamitri had just sounded more Scottish.
That's true.
Maybe they would stuck around longer.
You know, they had radio hits.
They did. Yeah, but they only had one hit.
That's true.
great song.
Yeah, they're a great songwriter. But, you know, I think especially in the US, we found, rather than it being a barrier or any kind of, like, colloquialisms.
Right.
colloquialisms.
I shouldn't. Most NPR phrase I've ever heard. Okay. Fallacious colloquialism.
Oh my God.
I heard it on NPR. Like, wow, there it is. That's it. You were saying,
just thinking about what that means. We'd have been lost, but actually, more than anything, the US audience has really embraced the accent and the patter, I guess.
And then the girls show up and they're like, say something.
Say anything. It doesn't matter. Potato.
Does that work for us when we go to Scotland? Do the girls go, speak American, please?
Oh, yeah. All the girls think you're movie stars back there.
We are?
Yeah, yes, we are. You'd clean up.
That's what you have to. All right, Scott, we got to get out of here. Thanks so much. Pedestrian Verse, Frightened Rabbit, and the new EP. It's been great seeing you.
Cheers.
My 2013 interview with Scott Hutchinson, talking about the Frightened Rabbit album, Pedestrian Verse, and the accompanying EP there, the Late March, Death March EP as well. Now we'll go up a few years to 2016. Frightened Rabbit was on the road promoting the record painting of a panic attack, and Scott dropped by the WFPK studios this time. He had just written an article about trees, about the environment from the point of view of a tree. So we talked about that, as well as unhealthy eating. There's a lot of talk about unhealthy eating, deep fried and carnival food, and just a great time sitting again with one of my favorite artists. It's part two of Kyle Meredith with Scott Hutchinson.
Hi, Kyle Meredith, and this is Scott Hutchinson from Frightened Rabbits.
Hello.
Back again.
Yeah, back once again.
It's been a few years.
I'm happy to see you.
I'm happy to see you. We last spoke on a lovely grassy bank, I believe.
This is quite different.
It's not quite as grassy.
We're not in a wind tunnel this time around, though.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, it was a complete wind tunnel. Yeah. Now, that was fun. We had some nice conversations about, what was it, bourbon versus scotch. I remember that part.
Yeah.
And times have changed.
Well, for me as well. I've spent 2 years in the United States, and and a girl turned me around to bourbon.
Is that right?
True.
That's true. Well, I'll
true
applaud
story.
That.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I had to stop. It was tearing me apart.
Completely.
It was actually the drinking was tearing me apart.
It's
ripping my stomach in two.
It can do that. Yeah.
I think I hit my quota earlier than I was supposed to.
All right.
And then you can't do that anymore.
I get that. Yeah. I think I always thought there's going to be a point where I'm just I'll have had all the drinks that I should have.
Right.
You know?
Hasn't happened yet, though.
Not quite yet.
Well, you know, it's nice, though, because since I've had to pull back, you've picked up the bourbon thing for me. So,
I picked it up. It's okay. Yeah.
The industry doesn't suffer.
Thanks
at this
for
point.
Sending those spare bottles.
That's no problem.
Yeah.
I'm more than happy to help. You know, the country thanks you. We're all very...
Oh, yeah. It's a service.
It's good. Anyway, so what was it? A painting of a panic attack.
That's right.
I almost said that backwards. Panic of a painting
attack.
It's
a bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah. You've done another fine record.
Thank you very much.
For Frightened Rabbits. Before we get into that, though, I read something, and it was a piece you did about interviewing a tree. You interviewed a tree.
I did. Brian, I think his name was.
Yeah, something like that. And this was for another magazine.
It was a magazine in the UK called Q.
Q, that was it. Yeah, I know Q. I only bring this up because I don't know if you did that as just kind of a total joke, but it was one of my favorite pieces of writing that I've read in a while.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It was half joke, and there were some little bits of, I guess, environmental concern in there.
Right.
So it was half and half. I thought it would, you know, I think for me, I've always thought it's important to put yourself in other people's shoes as to be empathetic. Mm-hmm. But I don't think many people are empathetic with trees. And
tree.
That's not, I'm not a hippie, don't get me wrong. It's a completely false.
He's a hippie basher is what you know. It's.
But, you know, I think there's something to be said for, you know, just thinking about what we're doing here.
Yeah, I caught it. It's not like you tried to slide that in under the rug too much. I mean, if you get in the article, and I guess that's what I was curious about a little bit, though, because, you know, I don't know who I was hearing recently somewhere in the world of media, but they were talking about how, you know, you have a lot of political songs, but you don't have a lot of environmental songs, or at least that, you know, really
not
take
really.
Hold.
It's a tough
like
one,
musicians
isn't it?
Don't really tackle that too much.
No.
So
Sting maybe does, but that's the, you know,
Neil Young has some early ones.
I guess he has. Yeah. I find political difficult enough. I don't think I've ever really done that. And, so environmental would be even tougher. Yeah. Like you say, it's hard not to sound like you're a tree hugger or something like that, but it needs to be said.
Right.
But maybe just, I think Billy Bragg should do it.
Billy Bragg
He probably has done it.
Billy Bragg just needs to be on a bigger level, where, you know, a bigger megaphone or whatever. So it's actually
he
hers,
does,
you
he
know,
can,
it's,
yeah.
Yeah, for a lot of reasons in that.
I would love him to run for a political post, you know.
Yeah, maybe he does better good this way.
Maybe he does.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't want to. Yeah.
It was cool though to read it, and I know it's kind of a different outlet for you. And I don't know if you fancy yourself a writer in that sense of much, but like you could, by the way. Like if that's the template, I would love to see you do more of this stuff.
Okay, I don't get asked to do it very often, and I do kind of. I require a brief, you know. Like one of the reasons why I enjoy songwriting is the template is there.
Mm-hmm.
3.5 minutes. I got a verse here,
sure.
A chorus here, maybe a little in-betweeny bit there. You know, that's what we call it in the trade.
the in-betweeny bit.
and that's something I can really hang my, you know, my vocabulary on. But if I am given a blank space, blank sheet, and with no real agenda, I find that very difficult.
It's very hard. I have to do a bi-monthly article, and there's no assignment or anything right. like that, you know. And it's like, oh,
it's man. Just you have a deadline.
Yeah, like, that's it. And you have to come right.
By, yeah.
So the songwriting's a nice cop out, you know. You can.
It kind of is, man. I mean, I'd love to be like, able to write a book, but you know, I just think I would get lost in the structure, in the sort of lack of structure of it all.
Yeah,
it'd take me a long time.
Yeah. Well, I can at least praise this piece that you've done.
Great.
And
thank
and,
you very much.
You know, anybody that hasn't seen it, Q, the magazine, you can find it online and just search your name in Tree Brian.
Pretty much.
Good fight. And the other bits, you know, that were going in, because I know there was a bit of the gap, and I was reading in that same article, I think it was a different piece in there, that you got in really heavily to a cooking show, and I think it's a British cooking show.
Well, there's a couple that I'm into.
And then your bassist has really taken up cooking.
Oh, he's a great cook.
Yeah.
Yeah, Billy actually, we were in the studio the first 2 weeks of making this album up in a studio called Dreamland near Woodstock, mm-hmm. and they're like us, kind of self-catered thing. So Billy just, you know, when he wasn't playing, he was making us lunch.
That's nice.
And it was delicious every day. It was just like,
yeah,
our minds were blown.
Does this like change your road, you know, eating at all? Because it's so easy to fall in, you know, you get the fast food and what's on this exit and let's hit the vending machines. But that's what I was thinking. It's like when you've got, you know, apparently such a good cook in the band and mm-hmm. you yourself who's very into the culinary arts right now. It's like that would.
Well, we have. No, it's funny you should mention that. It's a big issue in our tour right now. So, pretty much since the last one, almost all of us have become vegetarian.
Oh, wow.
And then two vegans in the band. And then also, we have this thing called Health Tour. And this is a contracted agreement between, I think there's five of us are doing it. There are four items that you cannot eat on show days.
Okay.
So I have chips, fries, that's one of my items, soda, pizza, and bread. And the others have different, and we've signed mm-hmm. a contract.
And you cannot eat them.
If you eat them on a show day, you are docked your per diem, and your per diem goes to charity.
Wow. So you really got to want that really badly if you're going to step out and do that.
Very drunk and completely forget it. Nobody minds either. It's like, yeah, I had a bit of pizza, give a bit of money to charity. Mm-hmm. It's fine. But yeah, it's just to kind of, we find that everyone's over 30 now. And it's not old as such, but it's older than when we were touring like Banshees, mm-hmm. eating and drinking whatever we liked in our 20s. And that's not something we can get away with anymore.
It starts to hurt.
It hurts.
It hurts a lot.
It hurts in the morning.
So have you found it, is it challenging then to do this on the road? Like, there's got to be some parts of the country where it gets close to impossible.
Yeah, it would be harder if we were able to request these things on our rider so someone can, our hospitality, they have to probably go a little further than they might in Portland.
Right.
To find the gluten free bread and the, you know, all the kind of meatless treats and stuff, but that part is easy enough. It's the late night.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you struggle. Like, you're not gonna. Some places you're.
That's
just,
how you end up at White Castle, man. We know the story.
God, yeah,
we all know that story.
Just picking out the lettuce.
It's 1 o'clock and you're starting to rationalize with yourself. You're like,
I'll break. You know, I have broken down a couple of times in the vegetarianism, but I would not break for White Castle.
Yeah,
because that's crap.
It's crap.
Yeah,
I know. I've toyed with the idea. I haven't walked to the vegetarian line, but I've toyed with the idea.
Like, yeah,
I'm kind of messing with it.
Yeah, I think I just don't know what's in those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's what scares me.
Right.
You know, occasionally, I'll have a little prime steak.
And again,
because I know what that, you know, if I...
Sure. But you've got to put your trust in strangers every single time.
You really do. A long line of strangers.
Yeah.
Like, there are a number of people involved in getting that into your mouth. and who knows?
And, you know, if from my point of view, and this is unfair for me to say this, like, I can look at Europe and say, like, you guys are worlds ahead of us on figuring all of this stuff out, because it always seems like that. You know, the United States is very much known as a fast food culture. I mean, we're in Louisville, Kentucky, which is home to so many fast food corporations.
Of course.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, how do we break ourselves of that? But you guys seem to have, like, you've got that into your brain, like, that's horrible. Why would you do that?
I don't know about that. In terms of Scotland, I don't want to bring him down, but we are quite consistently voted the least healthy country in Europe.
Is that true?
We have an affinity with fried foods. So deep fried is very much part of the diet. Like, we're talking, you can have a deep fried pizza.
You can do that here.
I know you can do it. Anywhere,
I mean, we have our deep fried Oreos and deep fried butter and everything else. You know?
That one, that one's weird.
That's a weird one.
But
or the donut burger. I mean, that's I guess donuts are sort of deep. We have the donut burger now.
Oh
god! I just saw it
appear in your hands. There,
you've got both the donuts and then you've got whatever the burger is in the middle. But yeah, that's a thing. Word. They've done that.
They've done everything.
USA. It's a sad
You know, the one thing that you won't do, and it blows my mind, is you won't put corn on a pizza.
Corn on a pizza.
Sweet corn. It's so
I like
good.
Sweet corn, but no, I've never.
I know.
We do lots of, you know what I do? And this is going to sound, you know, so I like a sausage pizza.
Yep.
With chocolate pudding, dip it in chocolate pudding. So see, you said sweet corn, and I'm like, that's weird.
Come on.
I'm going to throw that right back to you.
All right, okay.
Yeah, that's just one of those things I think I accidentally did when I was like 5.
All right.
And so it's a nostalgia taste for me. It's like, yay, sweet and salty
is a good combination.
I think it's great.
I think it's a classic.
I can't find any other person that, you
Fine
know.
Fine then, I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just want to try it one day.
Okay.
I don't know, but you got to break your the sausage rule, though, and the vegetarian to be able to do it off.
Of course, right, okay.
Yeah, good luck on that.
All right.
We've gotten so far away from this album, haven't we?
Very much so. I don't mind. This is way more interesting.
I don't mind either. We got to bring up the album. We got to sell it to the good people out here.
Sure.
There you go. Because you and I were laughing off screen, and critics like to throw certain words at you guys that I really think is unfair, because there's a style with Frightened Rabbit.
Yeah.
You know? There's a brand.
I understand that.
Yeah. But do you ever feel like it's kind of unfair, the pigeonholing? Like, let me write what I'm going to write.
No, it does. Well, this is a concern of mine often when I'm starting to write an album, and I will start off with a different kind of tactic. Try and remove myself from the songs a little bit more. And that happened on this one initially, until my brother sent me an email saying, yeah, I don't like them. They're not so good.
No.
And yeah, it's horrible to call it a brand. And we were talking earlier about how making your own life a commodity does seem sometimes like a little bit sick or something. But I think I have to realize that I'm doing this for a reason. I'm doing this because I have to think about why did I write my first song? Not because I wanted to play it to everyone and be applauded, but because I sort of had to.
Right.
There was something in there that came out in this very neat form that appealed to me and made me feel good. And that's what I was thinking about when I was doing this record. It's like, yeah, it's not regressive. It's kind of just what makes us. Us.
Yeah. Do you think then, in the popularity sense, I suppose, because, you know, Pedestrian Verse, you guys were, I mean, you've gotten bigger every single time, I guess. And well, now you look at this one and here's album number 5.
Yeah.
Like, is this like, oh, we've got a go big or go home moment or anything like that? Does that stuff equate?
I thought, I mean, on the last album, even the one before that, I always thought, if this is it, this is it.
That's it.
It's fine. I mean, I think too many people. I think that's how you actually can destroy your own, your own band or career. Maybe is if you're expecting too much out of it. And we've already got more than I could have thought. You know, if you told me 10 years ago this is what you know I'd be here. I'd even be here.
Yeah, right.
You know, that would blow my mind. So I have to continue thinking along those lines. It's like I'm lucky.
Yeah.
So.
Is that then the reason, like, so there was a solo record in between?
There was.
Yeah. Which is kind of interesting because there's a part of me, it's like, but that's what it started out as. You know, Frightened Rabbit was a solo thing at the beginning, and suddenly now, and I get it, you know, you have a band now, and they're your band, they're the family, they're part of the songs, they're helping you write them. So now you know, to do it alone again, it can't be the band.
Yeah, well, that was a purely selfish move. I mean, it couldn't, of course... Some of those songs could have easily fitted on Frightened Rabbit album, but that wasn't the point. You know, it was about feeling like I had only done this one thing for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that had sort of removed dimensions of my character and being almost, you know, I feel like I was just, even if I was out at a party or something and just like end up talking about Frightened Rabbit, it's like, stumps anything else. Let me do something else. And although it was still music, it was like a freeing process and it was an interesting process. And it was nothing to do with business or an audience. There was no audience in mind for this album. I didn't care. I didn't know if anyone was going to listen to it. I just wanted to make it for myself. Yeah.
It's so interesting, music as art versus many other art forms, how you have to do this in such a public way, how you have to deal, you know, with your own emotions and what's projected into songs that people then have, you know, they take through themselves and they deconstruct. And then you also have to think about it in this business way.
Kind of. You can't remove that entirely from your brain. There are certain things that just, you know, I think it was when you're making a record, I would never think about, like, units, you know. But I do think of occasions where it's like, oh, you know, the outro to a song, you're like, oh, that's going to be good in a live show. Yeah. You know, like, but you do kind of have to remain aware that there's a very fine line between pleasing your audience and pleasing yourself. There's that where do you sit on that?
Sure.
It's hard. It's a hard one because, like, I don't want people to hate it, but I need to feel good about it.
Yeah, so. But like, where's the line where you're just diving too far into yourself?
And yeah, that's true. Yeah, and that's not.
Then you get the King of Limbs. That's what you get.
Well, yeah, that might be true. That might be true. So, you're still delaying me from hearing this Radiohead song, man.
Seriously, as we talked, is right when the Radiohead single dropped. So yeah, you're gonna have to get out of here. You know, it's actually a good moment. I'm gonna set you free right now.
Oh, no, it's fine.
But I'll tell you that I do love this record.
Thank you, man.
Painting of a Panic Attack, and for everything that you might have had to go through to make this record, which I know is, you know, part of the deal and part of the game, it did make for a beautiful record.
Thank you.
So, Scott,
I appreciate
it. It's great talking to you.
Great to talk to you, man.
We'll see you later.
All right,
Rabbit. The 2016 interview with Scott Hutchinson right there, talking about the Frightened Rabbit record, Painting of a Panic Attack. Now, the last time we got together was actually over the phone. He had gone back to Scotland after having lived in Los Angeles for the last year or so at that point. Frightened Rabbit had just released an EP called Recorded Songs. This would be their final release while Scott was around. So he and I jumped on the phone and we talked about the importance of LA in his life at that point. Having Julian Baker on this EP right here, he had lost a guitar in Africa. A really entertaining story had come from that. So without further ado, part three of Kyle Meredith with Scott Hutchinson.
What's good to hear from you?
Yeah, good to talk to you, man.
Let's start with the EP, Recorded Songs. Beautiful new songs, and as I'm told, I mean, I'd love to get the story behind these because, as I guess the press quote goes, like, these are not looked at as B-sides or bonus tracks or throwaways or whatever, right?
No, they're not. They were songs that we loved throughout so two of them, Rained On and Roadless, were both written for the last record. And we demoed or recorded them up to a certain standard, and they just didn't fit. It wasn't that they weren't good enough. There was like a sonic tone to the record that those songs didn't really comply with. So, that's the main difference between these songs and a B-side. Like, a B-side is probably kind of a 6 out of 10 song that you've written and might as well go somewhere, but that's not how we felt about these, and hence why we wanted to give them slightly more attention than just throwing them on the other side of a single.
And Julian Baker, of course, is a part of this story with one of the songs.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we've been huge fans of her since the last record came out, and we were lucky enough to play some shows with Julian. It was a case of, you know, like, we're all standing there in the audience watching a support act completely silence a room full of people that came to watch our band, you know, and that kind of hit us pretty hard. It was spellbinding. Her show is incredible, and just for someone such a small stature on stage but such a big voice, and we just love her music. So it was kind of, we'd written this song and it seemed kind of right for a duet for another voice, and Julian was the first person that we asked, and she said yes. So it was a really easy easy thing to navigate.
Did you guys get to do it live together, or was this one of those over the mail?
It was over the mail, as is mostly the case these days. Julian was she's become incredibly busy, which is great. But she did the vocal in Nashville. We recorded, actually, we recorded the music in some of it in Texas and some of it back in Scotland. So it's a kind of, it's got an international recording structure.
Well, so on these songs on the EP, the two of them, I guess, that I centered on, because I was looking at the lyrics, and it's hard not to, especially if you know anything about, you know, I keep up with you online, you know, Twitter and everything mm-hmm. else, and I look at Roadless and I look at Rained On. And knowing that you were in L.A. for a while and now you're not, that's what I'm sort of looking at here. It's like, is this about your time there and leaving?
They were certainly, Rained On was written right in the midst of L.A. time. You know, I mean, the title itself alludes to me missing the seasons. You know, I was definitely feeling out of sorts there a little bit. I wrote that song in a sort of songwriting retreat up in Big Bear in the mountains near Los Angeles. And yeah, they do refer to that feeling of being a little lost in a space. Roadless is fairly obviously about that. But then trying to reconcile with that, I was going through this whole thing where I was like, is it me? Is it the town? What's wrong here? And yeah, I just gave it my best shot and it didn't work out. But there was some material to be gained from that, certainly. And these two definitely fit into that category.
I looked at Rained On and I thought, you know, as a fan trying to dig a bit deeper here anyway,
yeah.
Like, you know, it's possibly, you know, three different things, that it's quite a literal song, if you want to take it as that, you know, especially when you're talking about just the rain in L.A. and the Dust Bowl out there.
Yeah,
possibly a metaphorical song in a relationship stance, but I also saw the little bit of the political
yep.
side to it. You know, January 1st, the calendar flips, and everything turns a bit darker here in our country, at least.
Yeah, it is about you know, LA doesn't. It's kind of dirty because it doesn't rain enough. I was like enjoyed this joke by this comedian called Emo Phillips, who said like it needs to rain in Scotland so we can clear up all the vomit on the streets. And there's some truth in that, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but none of it is mine anymore. But yeah, no, this I see January 1st as very much like a start again kind of day, for however long it may last. Usually it lasts, like, you know, on a sort of more modern level, we'll, you know, maybe we'll go vegan for a month, or maybe we'll quit alcohol. But then it also can provide you with some perspective on the last year to then, you know, see how you go about your kind of personal life and your relationships differently as well. It's a kind of classic Frightened Rabbit song in that sense. It's about a relationship and it's about a very specific place. So yeah, and it's, yeah. But do you see January 1st as like a dark time?
No, you know, I was looking at it because I agree with every bit of what you said there. I was looking at January 1st, specifically this past January 1st, 2017,
oh,
as a darker time because of the November election.
Yes, now that's relevant, but it was written before that shit went down. So, but I can see how that could be applicable. Yeah, for sure.
I did try, and I think I'm wrong because of what you said earlier, but I said, you know, to think of myself, it's not impossible to draw a line between this EP and your earlier records, and I only put it in that context
yes.
because you're celebrating the 10th anniversary of Midnight
right.
Organ Fight. So,
well, yeah, you're right. They do bear relations with to a lot of that material. You know, there's like the acoustic guitars back in there, and they're slightly less dense sonically than some of the stuff we've been putting out recently. And that's also why they didn't fit on the last album. But yeah, it was nice to sort of revisit that feeling. I guess in a way we're always trying to go back to that feeling where, and I think about it a lot when we were writing Midnight Organ Fight, or I was writing it really. I was kind of doing that on my own, just with my brother helping out on drums. And that idea that there's no expectation from an audience, you're writing very much for yourself. It's almost a private affair, you know. There's it's all based in a bedroom. We weren't fancy enough really to be using studios much at that time, and for that everything's exciting and free. And now, you know, it's like your band becomes a business. You have employees. There's all this other side to it, and all that's like kind of strip away the innocence of making music. And so it's something that's constantly in my head. And yeah, there's like a very direct reminder of it next year that, you know, we did this record without really knowing what the fuck we were doing. And it somehow resonated, like out of nowhere, without us knowing. And then it snowballed. And, you know, we got to the point at the end of that album, around sort of beginning of start of our spring 2009, where our live agent was saying, you can come back as many times as you like, because I know that there'll be another 500 people in this town that discovered that record and really wanted to see it live. So it was just going on and on and on. And we, none of us knew what was happening, really. So I think it's important to celebrate that, because it's essentially the record that put us where we are today, which is a band that can just be a band that can do this for a living. And that's something I'm eternally grateful to that record for, even though we didn't really construct it that way.
And that record still holds up. I mean, it's only been 10 years, which, you know, in the grand scheme of anniversaries that we seem to be always be celebrating these days, it's not that long.
We are now, yeah.
Yeah, but still, I mean, 10 years is nothing to sniff at there either. So
have to listen to it again, I guess, to learn the songs. I haven't heard it for quite, I maybe haven't heard it in like 10 years, so we'll see how it holds up in my mind.
I do want to bring up, though, that, you know, you put the tickets on sale for this, and you've had to deal with the whole scalper thing, right?
It's been intense. Certainly more so than we've ever experienced in the past, yeah.
Now, I know there are a lot of artists that are, you know, trying to find the ways to get around that. Is that something that you guys have worked with? I mean, did this just blindside you the way it happened?
This was a surprise to us. So in the past, there's been a handful of shows, like smaller underplay shows that had sold out pretty quick, but they were so under the radar that the scalpers weren't on it. Mm-hmm. So there was none of this. This one was quite well publicized. About a week in advance, and that gave people time. It surprised everyone. Like, the ticket websites weren't prepared for the demand. A couple of them crashed because, you know, it's like on paper, it's like a little Scottish band that's just playing a record that's old as fuck, and they weren't expecting this. So nobody was expecting this. And then I'm on a train. And I'm like, tickets just went on sale. Let's see what's happening. Wonder how many they're doing. And then it's just this, I go on Twitter, and there's this stream of complaints of people saying, holy shit, I didn't get my tickets, but that I've checked on these like reselling sites, and they're like 3 times the price. And it's not something that's ever happened to us before. So we're completely unprepared, and I felt awful about it, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe it's not going to be a problem for us again, but it's really raised my eyebrow to the issue. I didn't, you know, I know that bigger bands have been fighting it. There's a very kind of hands-on approach from bands like Biffy Clyro over here, who have been finding ways. I know the Foo Fighters have started to do it, but it causes problems in itself. Mm-hmm. When people don't bring ID to the shows, and they need their ID to go with their ticket, and then they get turned away, and that's unfortunate too. So it's a real problem, and one that only in the last 2 weeks I've become more acutely aware of. So yeah, it's something that I'll be keeping an eye on for sure in the future.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, it does say a lot about the success of your band, which, you know, congratulations on
that. Sure.
On the other hand, I mean, These sites and these scalpers is such bullshit. I mean, fan is a fan of that, you know?
No, it's awful. We had, like, a lot of people got in touch to say, hey, if I knew my $100 was going straight to you, then I'd pay it in a heartbeat. But
right.
It's going to, you know, a faceless, you know, I think it should be, it's criminal, like, really.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
taking advantage of people who are desperate to see something, to see some, you know, just something that will make them happy. And a lot of the time, yeah, people will pay way, way over the odds for something just because they want to be there. And I find it abhorrent, and I would love to be more active. I was really, you know, the thing is, like, I was speaking to my mom about it, and then she was like, but, you know, there's lots of happy people, and they sold out in like a minute. Glasgow sold out in like 90 seconds or something. And I couldn't help but focus on all the people that were complaining instead of focusing on that's very much one of my traits, where I was like, yeah, there's this like kind of success story, which has these this awful side product, and I was focusing on that. So I'm kind of getting over it now, but I feel bad for those who didn't manage to get tickets. I think we all underestimated this.
Well, it's that kind of attitude from you that's given us such classic songs over these past 12 years. So, you know, that's good. There is a weird positive in the darkest negative.
I'll be sad, Kyle. For you, just for you.
No. The songs are good anyway. I don't want to end on this weird note about the ticket sales, but the story about your guitar is being lost in Africa. Did you get those back?
Yeah, I got my guitar back. Yeah, it was just one. My friend who I was traveling with, he lost all of his clothing as well as suitcase. So it ended up being found in Botswana. So we were in South Africa.
Right.
We were going from Johannesburg to Cape Town. They didn't turn up. And then we started being polite. And we're like, please, can we get some information? And then I just kind of went hardball and made it public on Twitter. And then we got immediate results. It was good. It's the power of social media again.
There is,
sometimes
yeah.
bad, sometimes good. And yeah, we got it back. They traced it to an airport in Botswana. So it's my guitar's been on a little trip of its own.
It makes total sense, you know, because you were in South Africa. It makes it, but there's something about, and my guitar ended up in Botswana that just sounds like a punchline. For something.
It really does. No, it is. And it's the thing is, like, yeah, I don't want to ruin the joke, but it's actually not that far away. It's kind of just over the border. But in your mind, it's like your guitar's gone thousands of miles and is just laying somewhere in the middle of, you know, a savanna plain or something. So, yeah, it was it didn't go far, but he's with me now. I can see him.
Well, I'm glad you got it back, and maybe that'll, you know, find its own influence into your next record, and you won't even understand how it happened. You know, it'll just be some African tones that's within the song.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah. Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Well, it was really, really awesome talking to you, as always.
Yes.
After this, I mean, the EP and the celebrating the 10 years, I can't imagine you guys are already looking at the next record, but is that something that's on your mind?
It is. We've started demoing, yeah. So it's already underway. And yeah, we don't want to leave it too long. But yeah, we've got some shit on our plate at the moment, but we'll be doing as much as we can in the time that we have.
Yeah.
In between touring and what have you.
Not wasting any time. That's incredible.
So. Yeah. Well, I like my job. I don't really want days off.
Well put. All right, buddy. We'll take care out there, and we'll see you around.
Cheers. See you soon.
All right.
Man.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
And there it is. Our final interview. My final interview with Scott Hutchinson of Frightened Rabbit. Talking about the Recorded Songs EP. That was 2017. He passed away May 10th of 2019, died by suicide, and my heart's still broken, and a lot of people's hearts are still broken. I am so grateful for all of the music that he put out into the world. I'm so grateful for his friendship. I'm even grateful for his final comment, his final statement that he gave into the world on his Twitter account when he said, "Be so good to everyone you love. It's not a given." He went on to say, I didn't live by that standard, and it kills me. Please hug your loved ones. Be so good to everyone you love. We miss you, Scott. And that's where we wrap this one up. But don't end on a sad note. Go out and put some Frightened Rabbit music on now and crank it really, really loud and sing along at the top of your lungs, because that's the best way to do it. It's very powerful music. And as usual, you can find me at WFPK.org every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern. You can head over to consequenceofsound.net for your music and film news. I'm at Twitter at Kyle Meredith and Facebook @KyleMeredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.